Okay, I think we'll get going. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us in the U.S., in Israel, in Palestine, in other places around the world. My name is Gili Getz. I'm a board member of Partners for Progressive Israel. We are happy that you joined us for this really important and timely conversation about Jewish-Arab and Arab-Jewish political partnership, an issue we focus on and care much about, and very, very happy to have incredible speakers tonight to help us get through this. Before we start, a few words about Partners for Progressive Israel. Partners for Progressive Israel is a progressive American Zionist organization dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between the State of Israel and its neighbors, which includes an end to the Israel's occupation based on a two-state solution. We support Israelis working to ensure social justice, civil rights, and equality for all of its inhabitants. Partners promote a just Israeli society through cultivation of Jewish-Arab partnership and seek to deepen American Jewish understanding of the complexities of both Israeli and Palestinian societies. One of the ways we do this is these types of conversations. This is our latest installment in Conversations with Israel and Palestine, a series of information of webinars to bring voices from Israel and Palestine to American and international audiences, providing an important link between progressives in the Middle East to those of us from the outside. If you like this conversation, please go to our website, progressiveisrael.org, to make a contribution. This is what makes these type of conversations possible. So without further ado, I'm gonna throw it to Gilad that will introduce our really extraordinary guests today for this important conversation. Gilad, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Gili. Hello, everybody. It's really amazing to see so many people logging in. My name is Gilad Halpern. I'm an Israeli journalist. I am the co-host of a podcast about books and ideas called The Tel Aviv Review, and the co-editor of a literary magazine, an online literary magazine in English, called the Tel Aviv Review of Books. I'll be moderating this event today for the next 60 minutes or so. It will start with a panel discussion between our two panelists that will be introduced momentarily by me for about 40 minutes. Then we will be answering questions from the audience for the next 20 minutes. Now, for those of you who haven't attended these webinars before, it's quite simple to pose questions to the panelists. All you have to do is click on the Q&A button that is at the bottom of your screen. If it doesn't appear, you need to hover with your mouse and then it will appear. Make sure that you type it into the Q&A box and not the chat box, because that's the box I'll be looking at. So if you type them into the chat box, they might be ignored. I'll be asking the questions for you because your mics are switched off for the rest of the discussion. So the only way to pose a question is by typing it. So make sure you do it. And I have to say that if you can start doing it already now or during the discussion, you don't have to wait till the end, to the Q&A session. And the webinar will not be interrupted if you do it. You can do it in parallel while listening or whatever it is that you're doing right now. So I'd like to start by introducing our panelists. Mohammed Darawshe is the Director of Planning, Equality and Shared Society at Givat Habiba Educational Center, as well as at Shalom Hartman Institute faculty member. He previously served as co-director of the Abraham Fund Initiatives and as elections campaign manager for the Democratic Arab Party and later for the United Arab List. Darawshe is a leading expert on Jewish-Arab relations in Israel. and has presented lectures and papers at the European Parliament, NATO Defense College, World Economic Forum, Club de Madrid, US Congress, Herzliya Conference, and Israel's Presidential Conference. He has received the Peacemakers Award from the Catholic Theological Union and the Peace and Security Award of the World Association of NGOs, and was a leadership fellow at the New Israel Fund. In 2008, Darausha was elected as a city council member in his hometown, Iksal. In 2009, he served as a member of the National Committee, which drafted Israel's coexistence education policy. He holds a Bachelor of Arts from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and a master's degree in public administration from Hartford University and in peace and conflict management from Haifa University. He lives in Iksal with his wife and four children. Good evening, Mohammed, and thank you for joining us. Ksenia Svetlova is the director of the program on Israel-Middle East relations at Mitzvim, the Israeli Institute for Regional Foreign Policies. She's a former member of Knesset and an expert on Middle Eastern studies. Svetlova was born in Moscow, and her family made Aliyah to Israel in 1991 when she was a teenager. She holds a BA and MA in Journalism and Middle Eastern Studies from the Hebrew University, and she is fluent in Arabic. She served for 14 years as a reporter and analyst on Arab affairs for Israel's Channel 9, covering Gaza and the West Bank and reporting from Tahrir Square in Cairo, Damascus, Beirut, Manama in Bahrain, and Tripoli. Her reports and op-eds have been published by the Jerusalem Post, the BBC, Kommersant, Al-Monitor, and other Israeli and international media outlets. In the 20th Knesset, the one serving between 2015 and 2019, she served as an MK for Hatnua Party, which was later part of the Zionist Union slate, and was a member of the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee. Today, she also chairs the Public Council of the Israeli Society for International Development and is a research fellow at the IDC, the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya, and of course, the author of a recently published book called Reporting the Middle East on High Heels that featured on my podcast, The Tel Aviv Review. So after we finish this, I encourage you all to go and listen to the fascinating discussion that we had there. Hello, Ksenia, and welcome to you as well.
Shalom and salam.
All right, so when we talk about Jewish-Arab political partnership in Israel, if I can ask you to describe what it means for you ideally, what it would be, a Jewish-Arab partnership, what would you say? Let's start with you, Mohammed.
Well, ideally, you know, the political power of the Arab community is about 20, 21 seats potentially in the Knesset. Ideally, I would like to see the matching 21 seats in the Jewish community, and to create a power, a joint power of 42 seats that becomes the heart of decision-making in Israel, that becomes the alternative of taking over control of what Israel should look like. So I think that my ideal does not have a glass ceiling. My ideal says full partnership, 50-50 type of partnership, a joint leadership of a political party, and every second would be either Jewish or Arab, and that's the way a party should look like. I think that the agenda also should reflect the audience. One audience would be the Arab community and its unique needs, needs for equality, needs for integration in the social, economic, and political decision-making arenas, but also the needs of those Jewish partners who most likely will be from the center left in Israeli society, which will bring more liberal agenda and to find the common denominator between the two sides, and hope to try to find the biggest common denominator between these two communities. That's my idea.
Ksenia, your answer?
So first of all, I can tell you what I think should not be happening, because in the Zionist Union, for example, there was one MK who was an Arab, Zuhair Bahlul, and the party could actually hardly live even with him. It was really painful to see how the leaders of the party struggle in order to adjust to some statements and some words that were said by this very, very moderate man that perhaps the most part of the Arab population in Israel would say that he's too moderate, he's too soft. He doesn't even begin, you know, to scratch the surface, you know. So this is definitely not the way. And when I'm looking right now at the left and center left Zionist parties that are looking to integrate, okay, let's integrate one person. Okay, you know, if we are really, really large, let's integrate two. This is not the way. So I fully, identify with said by Muhammad. I think that there should be, first of all, substantial representation for the Arab community. And there was, of course, you know, the partnership should be based on equal and just communication and common agenda. And it's not very hard actually to find one, because we do see the Arabs in Israel being integrated more and more in places of work, in places of study. The only place where it actually doesn't happen today, it's the Israeli politics, it's the Israeli Knesset. So if we are talking about poverty, if we are talking about crime, we are talking about everything from women's rights to more just allocations for students in schools and university and so on. The common agenda, it's here, it's on the ground. So, you know, just lower your head and to pick it up from there. Nobody until now was brave enough to do this. It really strikes me as you know, somebody who is identified clearly, you know, with the left. Why so? I'm looking with astonishment at the new initiatives that are coming up right now, rising up right now, and I'm really wishing for their success. There are many of them, maybe in some time, maybe not in these elections, but some of them actually will rise and will shine, because the understanding on both sides of the political map, I think it's there. I think there is clear understanding that we cannot just continue as we are, leaving behind such a substantial population, a population that are our partners in everything.
Mohammed, why do you think the Jewish center-left, the liberal left, has failed so far to engage the Arab population in a meaningful way, as you suggest?
I think that, you know, unfortunately we are recording, so I can't open up my heart completely. If it was a closed session, I probably will talk a bit more open. I've been trying.
Stay with us. Yeah.
I've been trying, and Senya in some areas, we've been trying to form this joint Jewish-Arab list for the last 2 years to run together. And I think there were like five different efforts that are, some of them are actually continuing with this process. you see, we have the same cough. The key problem that I found is pretty much disrespect for the Arab partners. Some kind of this elitist approach, mostly coming from the more leftist aspects of the ideological left in Israel. They continue looking at us as if we're supposed to work for them. I mean, in one of the discussions in one of the groups, they came and valued Jewish Arab political partnership as a value, saying we don't need to bring votes from the Jewish community. So let's build on Arab voters for a joint Jewish Arab party, but don't count on Jewish voters. I see this as the sheriff coming to organize how it looks, and you Arabs will be the voting poll. And I would actually, I would even say maybe 80% of the Jewish counterparts that were talking to us, when push comes to shove and we say, okay, we will form a joint Jewish Arab list, are you going to vote for it? 80% will vote for Meretz afterwards. So they want to form a joint Jewish Arab list, but even them, the founders, 80% of them of the Jews are not going to vote for it. They want 50% of the representation and maybe 5% of the contribution of the votes. It's a bit condescending. It's insulting in any way. It's the old school of how Labour Party used to work with the Arab community. Unfortunately, many people inherited, it seems, that kind of an approach. You see that very few of the original people from the Arab community that were extremely excited into this kind of partnership, very few are still talking about this. I mean, in this meeting, on record, I'm telling you now, if Meretz will open up and say we are willing to become a joint Jewish-Arab political party, then that I would warmly accept that. But to say, okay, we are a Jewish party that puts Arab representation exactly like Hadash. They say also that they're a Jewish Arab party. Out of their 5 seats, they have 1 Jewish person that decorates their seat. Meretz is a bit better because it's not just decoration, it's 2 out of 5. In Hadash, it's 1 out of 5. That's not Jewish Arab partnership. That's not Jewish Arab cooperation. In Meretz, the 2 Arab members of the 5 seats in Meretz had very little impact on the definition of the party. It still defines itself as it used to define itself the day before there were 2 Arab candidates. And Hadash still, you know, they still define themselves as the ones that are trying to lead the Arab national struggle inside the state of Israel. Many are seeing this as more as a technical issue. And I think that the growth of it is maybe the Arab, in my view, the Arab community is much more mature to it, willing to contribute not just leaders, but willing to contribute also votes. In the Jewish community, they're mostly willing to contribute leaders and not votes.
Xenia, I mean, Mohammed just mentioned 2 parties that are, you know, making all sorts of statements in that direction of a joint Jewish-Arab partnership in politics, whether it's Meretz that has done up its list of candidates, and Hadash that have been claiming to be a Jewish-Arab party for a long time and promoting supposedly a Jewish-Arab agenda. What do you think is really lacking in the current political landscape in Israel currently, that a hole that needs filling? What really, in terms of agenda, not just representation, but what would a truly Jewish Arab agenda in politics look like, in your view?
Well, first of all, I have to add something to what's said right now to Mohammed, that you know, the Arab part is expected to bring the votes, while you know, the Jewish part is you know, perhaps they can offer the ideology, the frame, but you know, the voters will not come. So I can tell you, and it's of course not based on statistics. I didn't run some tests. Also, statistics are quite dubious, and sociological researchers are quite dubious these times, because they never exactly, you know, tell us the real picture. They tell us the picture of what is happening in the specific day. But I can tell you, based on my conversations with many, many people who have been contacting me for the last 2 years, you know, since I stopped being a member of Knesset. People who are coming from all different social strata, from different communities, from different political circles, from Israel at home, Israel Beiteinu, and to labor and so on. They are ready. They are ready. They would be ready to support a party that is confident of itself, that is not hiding, that is not feeling ashamed by you know, the fact that it's a Jewish Arab party or a Jewish party or whatever. I can tell you also for sure that you cannot do such things 2 days before the elections. Okay, so I think the most problem is, I think it's a problem with all of the Israeli politics, basically. In order to change something, and here you expect it to change a lot, it's not something that is coming very easy to parts of our society that never had, you know, very easy and comfortable relations among themselves. You need to prepare for this change. You need to say 1 year before elections, 2 years before elections, listen, here we are. You can like us, you know, you can not like us. Netanyahu can incite against us. He can be not inside us, but we do not care. There is our agenda. We start to work on the ground with the people, not only choosing who will be the candidate, who will not be the candidate. Okay, so can, there can be some frame of some 20 guys, 30 guys, you know, that will be partners to this thing without already choosing, you know, who will be number one and number 15, you know, it's all irrelevant. But this is how Israeli politics looks right now. It's all very petty. It's all very, you know, self-centered. It's all about, okay, we are doing it because we want to be in the Knesset. You first need to be on the ground. You need to work together, Jews and Arabs. You need to provide for this structure in order to, after that, to come to the voters and say, okay, the elections are in 3 months, guys, we are running, and please support us because we can be your voice in the Knesset. Frankly speaking, I know many people that would vote for such a list. They feel that today, obviously, you know, labor doesn't exist anymore. In any case, you know, so for now it's a lost case. Meretz is struggling ideologically with its old guard and the new voices. And perhaps, you know, perhaps in 1 year, 2 years, they will be ready. About the new lists, unfortunately, they are not strong enough right now in order to say, you know, okay, so we are mapping ourselves as a new party that is completely changing the, you know, this voters map. We are not only taking votes from the existing left-wing parties, okay? But we are building from various, you know, strata, various circles, something new that can completely change the outcome of the elections. Nobody feels that this is the case right now. Therefore, you have lack of voters, you have lack of confidence.
As you said, Mohammed, in the beginning of this discussion, the Arabs in Israel are underrepresented in the Knesset, but they are underrepresented. It's not as if they're not represented at all. Actually, right now, if I'm not mistaken, the joint list representing mainly the Arab population in Israel is the third largest party in the Knesset, or even. What do you think, you know, if you were, in your understanding of the considerations of Arab voters in Israel, what would be the added value of a Jewish Arab party, a truly Jewish Arab party, the one that you're standing up for, as opposed to the joint list or the different factions that make up the joint list?
In a poll that was conducted by Professor Emil Fuchs, Camille Fuchs, a few couple of weeks ago, and when the Arab citizens are asked, what do you want from your political representation? Regardless, Arab only or Jewish Arab, more than 82% want effectiveness. They do not just want people to sing the right music to their ears, which is, you know, express the pain about discrimination, express the anger about the policies of discrimination, about the marginalization, and express our disagreement with mainstream Israeli policy regarding the Palestinians or security issues here and there. That has been the pattern of voting to Arab parties. And the pattern of voting to Jewish parties has been mostly being in the tail end of effectiveness. Voting to Labour Party has never been effective. Voting to Shas has never been effective. Voting to the Likud has never been effective. Simply, they knock your door on the month, we call it Shahr al-Marhaba, the month of hello in Arabic. That's when politicians come and know you. Exactly what Benjamin Netanyahu did yesterday. He came to talk about how wonderful things he wants to do to the city of Nazareth. Well, where was he 12 years ago? In the last 12 years, he didn't find chance to come and visit Nazareth. Now that he has no more votes in the Jewish community, he's coming to try to fool the Arab community and try to get votes from the Arab community. So 82% of Arab citizens want effectiveness in their political participation, not just to go and make the action on the day of elections, and then that action expires the day after without effectiveness. You only are, your Arab vote is valid only for one day. Ask Benny Gantz about it. The vote of the Arab members of the Knesset, the 15 seats, was good for one day only. when they recommended on Gantz to be to the president of the state of Israel. Well, that's exhausting to the Arab citizens. 73 years of pretty much the same thing, where you're used and thrown the next day. It's not political partnership. It's not. It decreases the will of Arab citizens to participate. Another poll that was done by N12 just a week
TV
ago.
Channel.
Yeah. It showed that only 39% of Arab citizens are confident that they want to vote. 61% are saying, we're not so sure. Up to, we don't want to vote. They were promised two things in the last elections by the joint list. Unity, and now it's clear it's a fake unity, and effectiveness. And that effectiveness, as I said, was valid for 24 hours and not more than that. And that's why you see them dropping, because they don't know how to play the real game. The last polls are showing that they might get 8 to 9 seats only. So what Arab mainstream, the 80-some percent want, they want Jews that can bring them to mainstream politics and not keep them stuck in the center left. I mean, I was negotiating in the last, you know, until about a week ago with very dear Jewish, very close to my heart, Jewish political potential partners. And they want to keep me in the far left as sort of a reserve credit to strengthen the far left in Israel. Well, that doesn't serve my interest. I want to move to more mainstream Israel, not to the right, but something to the, a little bit more to the center, so that I can really serve myself. I mean, I wouldn't do that, what Mansour Abbas is doing, where he's selling his soul for the devil, actually, with someone that he has no common ideological common denominator, to someone that has no basic understanding to rights of minorities. He speaks only about individual rights and not collective rights, which is Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, that tells you how simplistic Mansour Abbas's approach is. But that's not what the Arab community want. I mean, they like the idea of moving to the effectiveness aspect, but they dislike the fact that they will go to the right wing. And the Jews that are supporting in Israel Jewish Arab partnership, most of them are in the far left, not in the center. Very few people are like Xenia. Very few people come from Labour Party background. But the problem with Labour Party, it has very bad history. It was the history to the Arab community where it had those satellite Arab parties. And actually, let's face it, they did more damage to the Arab community. They institutionalized most of the discrimination, institutional discrimination against Arab citizens than even the Likud. They've done that. They are the ones that put the Arab citizens under military administration till 1966, and all of the following issues. I mean, when did the Arab community start actually breeding some kind of equality? It was in 1992 during Rabin period. That was the first wave. Second wave came around 1999 during Barak period. Then Olmert. After Olmert, it pretty much stopped. I mean, the 922 economic plan is not Benjamin Netanyahu. It's actually Olmert's seeding efforts that were put in, seeding work that was put into it. So we need Jewish partners that can bring us to effectiveness. We don't need ideological partners. If you want ideological partners, I doubt you'll get that majority of the Arab community. The majority of the Arab community want Jews can solve the crime. Not only that can help me enjoy what I hear. 113 Arab citizens were killed last year. 47% of Arab citizens are below poverty line. 50% of our kids ages 18 to 24 are not in employment and not in education. Ideology can't serve that, can't solve that. We don't want ideological partners. We want practical partners.
Xenia, do you think in light of everything that Muhammad said now, and in light of the event of March last year, right after the last elections, where a Jewish Arab coalition was really within reach for Benny Gantz, and yet just because of that very issue, he chose not to get into power and actually stay not in the opposition, but in a less effective position than he might have been if he had cooperated with the Arab with the joint list and the Arab representatives in the Knesset. Do you think a big enough chunk of the Israeli public is even ready for that idea? As Mohammed said, you don't need ideological partners. There are some among the Jews. You need a broader foothold within the electorate. Do you think it's even achievable?
So I was listening very carefully to my friend Mohammed, with whom we had many conversations before and some cooperation. And we enjoy speaking Arabic, although mine is a little bit, you know, less good than his.
Excellent. I can tell you. I hope that 20% of Israelis will speak half of what you are able to do.
By the way, one of the bills that I was very proud of to promote it, along with the other partners in my party, and also in other parties, was a bill to introduce the study of Arabic language in all of the Israeli schools from you know, the beginning, from grade one. So it, of course, the Ministry of Education, despite the Knesset voted on it in the preliminary voting, it just stuck it completely. It was Bennett then in the Ministry of Education. He did everything he could in order not to move, you know, ahead with this important legislation. But what I'm talking is that there is some, you know, catch 22 in this thinking that, well, the Arabs in Israel certainly need an answer for their grievances. And I can I experienced it myself when I was campaigning for the Machane Tzioni, the Zionist Union. By the way, I was never a member of the Labour Party because I came from the direction of Tzipi Livni, Hatnoa, a little bit more neutral than the Labour. But I can also tell you that despite the mistakes that were done by the Labour, you know, today it's not the Labour that it used to be. And there are also a more, you know, Javish, you know, members such Mirav Mikhaeli, and there are a little bit more hawkish ones. So it's not the same party, obviously, as it used to be in 48. But I'm not here to talk about Labour, which is not really relevant, at least to current elections. When I was going, you know, from Bak al-Gharbiya to Sofia, to Nazareth, to Bozangaria, to all of these places, I heard time after time, I heard, yes, we need our schools to get better. We need our road to be fixed. We need more employment places, you know, for our people because we have none around our villages and around our cities. This is all correct. However, the problem is that those parties that you're talking about are interested. I found that the hard way. Not even, you know, talking about it. No, not. I'm talking about myself here, okay? I think it's important for us, the Israelis, to talk about it. But even to talk about, you know, Jewish-Arab cooperation, you know, let's say in education, I could not find partners in the center wing, you know, in order to promote with me such issues. It was ridiculous, you know? When there were discussions that were dedicated to the Arab sector grievances in, transportation, education, and so on, no members of such parties ever appeared to these discussions. And this was like one of the more dovish part of the labor of or what is used to be called labor, okay? I see it as an Arab party, not as an Arab Jewish party. But yes, but they're not ready to partner with you because then they're afraid that they will be losing their base. That's the problem. This is why Netanyahu is saying today, okay, we will never go with Mansour Abbas, we will never go with them. Okay, so I think, you know, you have to also have the ideological, you know, partnership in sorts with, you know, obvious gaps and with obvious, you know, disagreements, because naturally that they will appear. But they have to be some ideological partnership. I do believe that you have to do it, because otherwise you cannot, you know, tell to your constituency, listen, we are going right now also with the, you know, the very important community of the Israeli Arabs together to fight for what's important for you and them. If these communities are not ready to accept it, either you invest, like, you know, all of your time in convincing them, it's a very hard job. Convincing generally, it's very difficult. And changing somebody's opinions, like, oh my God. Or you go with people who are ready to go with you. Okay, so, these people, they in the left, a little bit in the center, to left, but they can be a center, you know, left center, perhaps center right party talking about. We're not talking about for a while, about a party that can be an all Israelis, you know, party that wants to be the leading party to take 30 mandates. No, 4, 5, 6, that will be excellent. That will be excellent for the beginning in order to influence within the future coalition that will be based not on the Likud, but on other party that is in the, you know, center right and so on.
Right, so thank you for now. We're now switching to the Q&A segment. You can still, I'm talking to the attendees, you can all still type your questions into the Q&A box, and I will choose some of them and deliver them to the panelists. Mohammed, let's start with you. There's a question from Phyllis Bernstein. What can be done and should be done to change the 2018 nation state basic law, and who can do something? How is it affecting life for Arab citizens? And I would like to add to that, to what extent do you think it would feature prominently on the agenda of a Jewish Arab party or political representation?
Thank you, Phyllis, for the question. I know Phyllis from New Jersey. The nation state law, I think, is the most outrageous anti-Arab law that was passed in the state of Israel since its creation. It's a law that tries to create a hierarchy in the definition of the state as Jewish and democratic by putting the Jewish nature above the democratic, and basically putting Arab citizens as secondary, second-class citizens de jure, legally. I mean, it was maybe de facto until July 19th, 2018, it became a de jure, now legal, a systematic hierarchy of the state of Israel. And in order to challenge that, you need, I think, Xenia, 2/3 of the seats of the votes in the Knesset, because it's a basic law. So yes. I do not think it will be changed in the Knesset. I think it will not be eliminated in the Knesset. I think if it will be eliminated, this will happen either in the Supreme Court or trying to do amendments in the Knesset where you can go for a regular majority. A basic law to eliminate it completely, it's not enough to have a regular majority. You need 2/3 of the Knesset. I don't see in the near future, 2/3 of the Jewish, 2/3 of the members of the Knesset willing to take that kind of action, unless it's critical for them to form a coalition, mainly with Arab parties. Because when Ghadir Imrih from Kahol Levan said to Gantz, I'm willing to go with you to government with Netanyahu, the only thing I'm asking you to do is to commit to eliminate the nation state law. She said, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to enter with the Netanyahu government. I only have one question, one demand. Eliminate the nation state law. Even Gantz with his, at the time, with his 62 seats, he was not willing to pay that price in order to maintain his relationship with the Arab community, including the Druze segment of the Arab community. So I'm not very hopeful of the current political scene, unless there is a situation where, as I said, there might be a political leader that is challenging Netanyahu to form a government, let's say if it's going to be Saar, and he actually needs to have part of the Arab representation into his coalition. Clearly, he's not going to take Balad, he's not going to take the Islamic movement, but he could actually take maybe Hadash, and I hope he might be able to consider taking my party into this that kind of coalition, or a joint Jewish-Arab political party that will put this as a demand. I personally made an announcement in the last couple of days. Yes, we want in. We want to participate in a coalition. We want to be part of a government. But we will not enter into any government that is not willing to take that kind of law, eliminate it, or at least empty the racist and discriminatory elements of it. And amending it is much, much easier. That's a regular majority and not a unique majority. The second part of the question, Phyllis, how is it affecting the life of Arab citizens? I'll just give you an example. I mean, the trickle-down effect is beginning. The city of Kermiel buses some children out of the city to special education. Some Arab kids go to the neighboring towns, Nahif and Rami, because that's where the families originated from. And some Jewish kids go to a more religious type of education, or kibbutz education in neighboring towns. And the city pays for that. But one day the city woke up and said, we don't want to do that. The Arab residents of Kermiel went to the court and the judge said, this is a Jewish city. And based on the nation state law that defines that this is a Jewish state, I can actually, the city is allowed to discriminate. So that's one small thing. And the longer the nation state law continues, I think it's going to trickle down more and more and more into apartheid. This law is the beginning of a slope of an apartheid. It's not going to end there. You know, you have a judge using it, and you can count on hundreds of judges in the future that are going to use it. And I think the fear of it is not the law. You know, they said that it's just a statutory, it's just a, what do they call it? It's like an announcement. It's just announcing something. Well, it's not announcing. It is being used to forbid Arab kids from getting their busing to school. That is racism. That is racism by under the support of the constitutional law in the state of Israel.
All right, I'm going to combine a few questions from David Lelleveld and Gilly Getz. We haven't talked almost at all about Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. What do you think is going to be their attitude towards them? I mean, dealing with the occupation on one side and with a Zionist agenda that means a lot to the Jewish part of the partnership, or at least to most of them. How do you think you're going to square that circle, Xenia?
Okay, so first of all, I saw some questions in the Q&A to clarify the issue of the Palestinian Arabs in the West Bank and Gaza and their relevance to the Israeli politics. So first of all, for those who know it, okay, but for those who don't, the Palestinian Palestinians in West Bank and Gaza, they are not the citizens. This is the thing, you know, they cannot be elected to the Knesset, they cannot vote, they don't have any political rights in this regard in Israel. So their voices, of course, not counted in. And whereas to the Israeli Arabs, I think there is this controversy on how high the issue of the Palestinians and the Palestine in generally should be on the agenda. Because many say that, well, you know, for years we were concentrating on this, we never achieved it. At the same time, we forgot about ourselves, about our life, our children, our education, our employment, and so on. So I can tell you that it's always difficult to square, you know, this circle and to find, you know, a solution. But until you are not inside with this, you do not know, you know, you do not, you just cannot say exactly, you know, what will happen, what will be the reactions. I think that any party that right now raises its voice for the two-state solution, and because in Israel, you cannot avoid the discussion on other issues, because in any case, even if you are there, if you want to be in the coalition only for the sake of your constituency, at the end of the day, if there will be some, you know, voting in the coalition about annexation, how will you vote? Okay, I think it's crystal clear that no Arab party, no Arab Jewish party will be able to live with this. Okay, it will not be able to be a part of the, you know, right wing annexation supporting coalition in this regard. So I think that there is only one possibility for such a party to be a part of some centrist, or perhaps, you know, everything is now leaning to the right, so it's center right. Probably, I do not know of any centrist party right now. I only know of those who are center right, who are not very eager to go ahead, you know, with the annexation. I'm not talking, of course, about Gilad Saar, but people like Yair Lapid. Okay, so he might try to disguise, you know, his truly, I would say, you know, traditional center-left positions. He tried to disguise it in order to get more votes on the right. It's not really working for him, so I don't know how long he will keep doing this. But in any case, such a party can only find its place in such a coalition, not in a right-wing coalition. And there, I think it will be just a little bit easier to also deal with the Palestinian issue, also to deal with the grievances of the Israeli Arabs and the Jews, of course, and to work for the common good by resolving also some of the burning political issues. You cannot only talk about economy and social rights without, I think, tending to the most burning issue for us. You know, in Abu Dhabi, they can right now say, well, it's not relevant to us anymore. We don't want to deal with it right now. We cannot achieve anything there. But we are Israelis. We do not have any option to just forget about it. The presence, the reality will just pose, you know, itself on us. So I don't think it's impossible. It will be difficult, of course. Everything is difficult in Israeli politics. Even if it's, you know, only Jews with Jews, still it's complicated. But it doesn't say that we don't have to try. We must do it for the sake of ourselves, for the sake of our children.
A question from Lee Gordon regarding Netanyahu's attempt to garner votes among the Arabs, represented yesterday by his visit to, as you said, Mohammed earlier, to Nazaret for the first time in his premiership, and and bear in mind that he's the longest serving prime minister in Israel's history. How effective do you think that these outreach attempts are going to be for Netanyahu, and what do you think should be done to counteract them?
I need to be very careful in what I say, because I heard that it's not what's going on is not just it's not what you only see in the media, that there's some kind of interesting green paper that circulates a few days before those visits. So I can't say more than that. The Likud is investing in so much in trying to collect in one way or another the easy votes from the Arab community. Votes that went behind the joint list when it was still appealing. Now when it's not appealing, there, as I said earlier, they're up for grab. It needs to be real street battle with the Likud people. They come with stacks of green paper. They come with stacks of promises of what the government in authority can promise, whether it is giving permission to build a home. 50,000 Arab homes are lacking permits. You might start seeing permits flying right and left. There are many Arab citizens are waiting to get 17,000 Arab teachers are unemployed. Suddenly you might start having the Ministry of Education employing people right and left, promising jobs right and left. And many people could be very weak, you know, that you might, the house that was under demolition order is now, it could become legal. That could be a million shekels worth of a piece of paper that you need to cash it in some ballots the day after. The weakness of the Arab community, the social economic weakness of the Arab community, allows government parties to thrive into those conditions. And as I said earlier, Netanyahu is so desperate right now that he's willing to do legal and it seems allow some people around him to do other type of, to take other type of actions within the Arab community. In my view, my analysis is that you need to offer an alternative that is not the joint list and it's not the Likud. And even if those votes are burnt completely and thrown to the garbage, it's better than them going to the Likud.
Do you think there's a chance that a sizable proportion of the Arab electorate would go to the Likud?
As I said, you know, Manu Geva, was it, that they said that, that the, one of the pollsters in Israel said that there might be, according to his polls, 3 to 4 seats could go to the Likud. So if the battle is on these 3 to 4 seats, you know, burn them completely, I would take that risk.
There's a question from Bill Hochhausen regarding Arab-Jewish cooperation within the civil society by many NGOs, and Mohammed might be able to tell us more about it because he's been involved in that sector for a long time. But do you think that the political realm and the civil society realm should work in tandem in that respect? Is there experience and inspiration to be drawn from the work that's been done in civil society and perhaps replicated to the political realm, Ksenia?
First of all, about the previous question about some mandates that can go to Likud, I can tell you that I know, you know, for sure, because there is this data available, that Likud, Shas, and Israel Beiteinu, all right-wing parties, traditionally get some votes in the Arab sector. It's not news, you know, it's been known for years that specifically in the north, specifically among the Christian Arab communities, among the Druze, you know, there are some kind of deals and things happen. So they, you know, it might be increased, but we shall see about this. How active will the this electorate be altogether, given the you know, hopes that were just crashed by what Gantz had done to this camp. So about the experience that is existing, you know, in the social sphere and the, you know, civil society, I think that it would be wise to capitalize on that. It seems to me that, you know, there are already bridges that exist. There are people who know each other. There are organizations that have been working for years with both populations, and not to use them, I think it will be a shame. Or saying that, I have to also tell you that it's very difficult to transfer the civil society experience to the political field in the Knesset. Because yes, it is, you know, quite different. It is at times, as all politics, you know, it's not a secret, you know, it can be very dirty. People in civil society understand that they would need to make some deals. Otherwise, it will not work. And the effectiveness will, you know, also depend on them doing deals that they might not necessarily obliged to do while, you know, they're working in Adala or in Musawa or in some other organization. Okay, so when you get to the Knesset, then you understand that, you know, basically you can achieve anything. It's the question of what are you ready to do with, for this purpose. Okay, so so it is, you know, there are some blocks, you know, there are some problems also with that. At the same time, again, you know, there are excellent people and some of them actually had made this road, you know, from, you know, civil society and joint work, you know, Jews and Arabs to the Knesset already. Hopefully there will be more.
Mohammed, can you share your experience in the civil society sector with us and tell us what it means for the political realm?
Well, I think that civil society in Israel, the field of Jewish-Arab relations, has been very fragmented. It's not operating like a movement. It's not, I mean, there's one forum of the Forum of Shared Society Leaders, which is supposed to bring all the heads of the joint of organizations working on Jewish-Arab relations. It meets once a year for 2-3 hours. It throws out ideas in the air, and it never results in any practical issues. Yes, it breeds some potential leaders. There's no question about that. People that eat and drink and the ideology that Xenia spoke about. So it does breed some good people into this arena. But they don't have the system beneath them. I mean, all those organizations do not take any real action in the day of the elections. And in previous elections, when I wanted to organize get out the vote campaigns, I had to resign to take leave of absence to do it. So there's no structured body that says, okay, some of those people, this cadre that has mailing lists and has you know, all kinds of experience with people on the ground and people that are graduates of those kinds of programs can be channeled in the right day for the right task. So there's a lot of ad hoc projects. Some of them are 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, fantastic individual results, but not collective results yet.
Right. I think we're reaching the end of our discussion. So I'd like to thank you, Mohammed Arashe and Xenia Svetlova. And if you, I would like to give you just a few seconds for very final thoughts. Please briefly, Xenia, we'll start with you.
So very briefly, I think that the left, center-left parties and the electorate will find out very soon, some of them, they're already realizing that they cannot succeed. They cannot succeed in changing the existing structures of. And today it's Netanyahu, but it's not only about Netanyahu, we all know it. Without genuine cooperation and working with the Arab sector in Israel inside the political frame. So I think after Netanyahu, someday, you know, this day will also arrive for some time. We all will, have time to think a little bit and start to do the operational work on this regard. Because otherwise we will be, it will be this Netanyahu or another Netanyahu, but it will be some form of what Netanyahu had created. If you want to change it, then we must find a way to cooperate together.
Mohammed, your final thoughts briefly?
Well, I think that on the ground, Jews and Arabs have managed to create many islands of success and of cooperation. You see it in the medical arena. You see it beginning to develop in universities. You begin to see it in high tech. There's some nice emergence there in businesses. There are islands that are not connected. And the same thing with civil society organizations. I think that we need a bit more of strategic type of approach to Jewish-Arab relations, connecting those dots together to be able to translate that into political power. That the votes are there, the people are there, the experiences of the individuals are there, but they're not gathered together to create political power. I think if I do not get into the Knesset, that will be my next NGO project that I will take when I go back, if I go back to my previous position.
I'd like to thank you very much, Gilad, Muhammad, and Xenia. I always learn so much from you. Thank you, and thank you everybody for coming for this important conversation. Please keep an eye on your email. We'll have next month a conversation with the Meretz members who are take another path at joint political partnership, and go to progressiveisrael.org if you'd like to contribute. And have a great rest of the day. Thank you so much for engaging in this important conversation. And I hope to see you very soon. We'll keep following you very closely. So thank you so much for you and everybody who joined us today. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for having us.
Bye, Xenia.
Bye. Shalom and salam.